Welcome to NPR Illinois Community Voices. I'm Matthew Tronfio, a graduate student in UIS's Public Affairs Reporting Program and a State House Reporting Intern for the Chicago Sun-Times. I'm here with two of my classmates, Jenna Schweikert from Capital News Illinois and Jordan Danielle from NPR Illinois, to talk about policy issues being debated this spring at the state capitol. One of the issues we've been hearing lawmakers talk a lot about is affordability. Jenna's been following this initiative called the Prescription Drug Affordability Board. Jenna, do you want to tell us a little bit more about that?
Absolutely. So a Prescription Drug Affordability Board, we call it a PDAB. It's an independent board with the power to review certain types of prescription drugs and set a maximum price on what that drug can be sold for. We call that an upper payment limit. And the board would do that if it finds that the drug presents an affordability challenge to the average consumer. So on Illinois' board, under this bill, there would be five appointed members who could review types of drugs like really expensive specialty drugs, drugs that have had really sudden price increases, and even some drugs were suggested for review by the public. And it would do that by reviewing information from the stakeholder council and from records from manufacturers, insurers, patients, and pharmacies.
Yeah, that sounds interesting. And I know that, prescription drugs and the prices that you have to pay for them has been, you know, a conversation point in different states across the country as well as on the national level. It's something the president has talked about, too. So, I mean, with this specific legislation, is there any idea how much money it could save consumers if it were to go through?
Yeah, I mean, that's the million-dollar question that everyone wants to know. There is a report from a progressive policy coalition called Citizen Action Illinois, and that report found Illinois could save nearly $2 billion on state health plan spending by adopting 10 negotiated upper payment limits on Medicare drugs. But the issue is that companies don't share confidential information in order to protect themselves from competitors. That's a legally protected right that they have. So that data in that report might not be entirely correct. And that's where some opposition is coming from, some concern. Some patients are worried that manufacturers may pull out of the state and they may lose access to their prescriptions. There are also pharmaceutical companies, other commerce-oriented organizations that are arguing, we don't really know what this board would do, because the truth is that no state has enacted a UPL yet. There are other states with PDABs, and they have taken steps towards prescription drug affordability. Colorado has come the closest, but it's currently involved in litigation. So we just don't have any evidence to say what this board could do either way.
That's interesting. Could you tell us where the bill is at now, Jenna?
Yeah, so there are identical bills in the House and the Senate chambers. The Senate's bill sponsor is Graciela Guzman, but her bill didn't make it out of the executive committee and onto the floor before the deadline passed. The House sponsor did manage to pass some amendments out of committee. Those include the amendments include a 5-year sunset date. It lets the state choose to opt in on any UPLs, and it clarifies accountability processes in the bill. Now, that bill does have a lot of co-sponsors, including the House Speaker, which is a good sign. But when the bill came up for debate on the floor, the sponsor pulled it before the chamber could vote. That sponsor is Nabila Syed. We don't really know why that happened, but it does suggest that she wasn't really sure if it had the votes to pass on the floor. It's not looking good ultimately for this bill, but, you know, it is the Illinois legislature, and there's still a chance this bill could come back later in session. We have about a month left, so there's still opportunity here.
PDAP is a state thing. There are federal concerns with prescription drug prices under the 340B program. Matt, you've been following that a bit. Can you bring us up to speed?
Yeah, so for starters, the 340B program is a federal program that was established in the 90s. It essentially just allows hospitals and health providers who serve large portions of low-income patients or people who are on government health insurance or just not insured, it allows those health providers to get discounts on prescription drugs, with the idea that a lot of those more vulnerable populations normally don't pay for all the services that they receive. So a lot of times those hospitals and those health providers end up being in a situation where they sometimes just lose money because they give treatments to people that they end up not getting compensated for. So the 340B program was functioning for a couple years now, and then in around the COVID pandemic in 2020, a lot of pharmaceutical manufacturers started implementing these restrictions that kind of took away some of the access that both patients and health providers had to the discounts that they typically received on drugs. We've heard stories from patients specifically that have kind of said, you know, they would have to pick up their 340B prescription drugs at a Walgreens that might be in Joliet when they live in Chicago. So they end up having to drive 40 minutes out to get weekly prescriptions, 40 minutes back. And it's just something that a lot of families can't really deal with a lot of the time. And it's been difficult for a lot of hospitals as well who are already dealing with things like federal Medicaid cuts and federal cuts to Medicare as well, that have put a lot of those hospitals in a really tough place where they're not sure if they have the revenue streams to stay open. A lot of them are thinking about maybe potentially closing because of not having those revenue streams. So the 340B is a part of that issue. There's a lot of other things going on with it too.
Yeah, I mean, in the end of March, we saw that hospital in Oak Park close. That was a safety net, a 340B hospital. It was really sudden, the closure, but it said that it had been having some really severe financial issues. So, Matt, what is Illinois trying to do to help a federal program?
Yeah, so there's a bill moving through the state legislature right now that would do a handful of things to help fix the 340B issue on a state level. So, I mean, first, the thing it would do is it would require that no drug manufacturers or pharmacies can implement any kind of restrictions that would prevent a patient or a provider from getting access to the 340B drugs that they qualify for. But it also addresses some of the concerns that came from some of those pharmaceutical companies that, which those concerns are that hospitals and health providers have used the 340B program and the discounts they get from it to pocket money by getting those savings and then charging them at full price in a way that just kind of allows for hospitals to use this as some of what they say is a profit machine. So the bill that's moving through the legislature would also require that hospitals and health providers that qualify for those discounts are more transparent and they report how they use the money that they make and save from the 340B program. And when I talked to Representative LaShawn Ford, he told me that really the 340B program is a federal program and there's a limited amount of things that Illinois can do on a state level. So one of the things they're hoping to get from the reporting requirements is that they get more data, they get more information about how the 340B program is operating here in Illinois, and they can bring that to Congress and they can maybe make more changes to the program at the actual federal level where more changes are, you know, applicable.
So, Matt, can you pinpoint where this legislation is at inside the chambers and where it's going?
Yeah, so the bill that that the legislature is moving through to help deal with the 340B program, it passed the Senate unanimously last spring. Since then, it's been stalled in the House for about a year now. So it's strange how little momentum there actually has been behind the bill itself. But one sign is that recently, Chris Welch, the Speaker of the House, added himself on as a co-sponsor to the bill. So that could hint that maybe there will be a little bit more momentum in passing it through the House, where it would then go to the governor's office and be signed into law if he chose. But, you know, we don't really know because there's so many other things that are happening at the State House. We have no idea how high of a priority it is for the Speaker. But it is interesting to see just how much momentum there is against passing this bill from a lot of these pharmaceutical companies. There are ads everywhere on a lot of different political websites that are making claims that the 340B program is a profit machine, and those are being sponsored by some of those bigger pharmacy companies like Eli Lilly Pharma and Merck & Co. and things like that. So it is interesting to see how big of a deal it is being talked about, but we don't really know what the momentum is behind passing it through the House.
340B is a huge thing. We've been talking about this for months now. But I know another thing on the mind of a lot of legislators is unfunded pension liabilities. This is a decades-long issue. Jordan, I know you've been researching that. Will you tell us more about it?
You had to ask, didn't you, Jenna?
I did. I really did.
So coming out of the 1960s, Illinois had a reputation for not exactly consistently funding pensions the way that they should. And lawmakers could and sometimes did sort of change how benefits were delivered, or there would be seasons where contributions were being skipped. And so public workers, teachers, the police, state employees, they were all worried about this and their retirement. And so the state government's political interference became an issue. And in the 1970s at the Constitutional Convention, pensions were sort of a key issue when they rewrote the Constitution in the 70s. And in Article 13, Section 5, they actually added legislation. The specific wording says that the benefits of the pensions in question here shall not be, the specific words are diminished or infringed. And so this became part of Illinois law. The state must pay these pensions no matter what. It's not an optional debt. This is a legal debt now that the state has sort of encoded into its own existence. And so as a novice to Illinois politics, once you learn this, and that since the 70s, this issue on the surface seems to have basically been ignored. The buck has been passed decade by decade. My first reaction is, if the state asks us as people to be fiscally responsible, you know, certainly as the state, they should be more responsible. And it's not actually that simple. And so once you get into this issue and politics are put aside, Illinois, like every state in America, has been living through radical demographic and technological booms, one after another, since the railroad connected the economies of Chicago and downstate and interlinked them into this unique hybrid system in American politics. The pensions, regarding them, every legislative season, it seems as though lawmakers have sort of been caught in the same feedback loop, where they are being forced to weigh and measure short-term priorities against this long-term pension obligation. And since politicians are mainly concerned with their own election cycle, this means that putting money into pension has taken sort of money away from the visible programs that they have instead used this funding for today. And so there's actually a great quote from this in Illinois Politics, A Citizen's Guide. On the last page of the book, the authors sort of sum this up, and they say, "The emphasis on the expensive political game of getting elected seems to take energy away from the task of managing government well." And so in the 90s, Governor Jim Edgar took a look at this issue and tried to bring the power of the governor's office into it and to try to fix it. This is the so-called Edgar ramp season, where the unfunded pension liabilities that had been growing, they tried to stem that tide by creating what was essentially a financial product. These are government-issued pension bonds where the government has gotten into the stock market in order to try to pay down both the interest and the principal. At the time in the 90s, there was about $15 to $17 billion during Governor Edgar's term, and lawmakers created a plan to gradually pay the debt down by 2045. This is the so-called structuring of the debt. But again, the biggest payments were always put towards the end of the list, and it was a great idea on paper, just like adding it to the Constitution, but it didn't really make it that far into history. And so by 2010, Illinois lawmakers realized that they couldn't really undo the pension debt, but they could change the system going forward. So this is the so-called Tier 2 pension system, where pension holders in the state are divided into two categories: people that are hired on or after 2011, and those that are before are the Tier 1s. And so lawmakers have sort of added this issue into every legislative season, and it's not exactly trying to be fixed in one fell swoop. There is a long-term plan to pay this debt down, and even to use it as something the state can kind of have as part of its financial portfolio. And so Governor Pritzker has continued this tradition. I should mention, in between Pritzker and Edgar, Governor Blagojevich had borrowed using this financial system that had been created about $10 billion in 2003 from lenders. Governor Pat Quinn did about $3.7 billion in 2011. And the state borrows money from investors sort of like the way a private person would borrow a loan from a bank. This system creates pensions that are invested in money and earn more than the interest of the bonds. If that happens, the state comes out ahead, and so they can pay off their debt. And if not, the state is stuck with even more debt.
So, Jordan, it kind of sounds like, you know, when you get a credit card, your parents tell you don't pay the minimum payment every month because your debt grows and grows, right? So what does that mean for the average Illinoisan, just in conclusion?
So it does mean that this can get kicked down to the average Illinoisan. We've seen this happen recently with property taxes getting bumped down to homeowners in having to make up a gap. And so Governor Pritzker has kind of tried to toe the line here as well. He's got a plan to pay the debt down 90% by 2045. And so there is a new plan, and Illinoisans do have a sort of a light at the end of the tunnel, but it's sort of the same but different.
Thank you, Jordan. Thank you, Jennifer, for both hopping on to talk about some of these important issues and bring us up to speed. And thank you to the listeners for tuning in and paying attention to the stuff that we've been following. So if you'd like to hear a replay of this conversation, you can do so by visiting nprillinois.org.